ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय please come forward because more people are expected to come. This talk is especially meant to be for all our very intelligent students. Of course, most of the intelligent students haven't come yet, but hopefully they'll gradually start to come. Generally, when we think of students, we hope they will be intelligent. To study, there has to be some modicum of intelligence. And intelligence is that which is supposed to differentiate humans from animals. And better humans or greater humans from lesser. Of course, in the modern age, we talk a lot and hear about a lot about equal rights, and all people are equal, but clearly some people are more intelligent than others. And the whole idea of studentship or education in the modern age is that by utilizing one's intelligence, one will be able to get a better position in the world than those who are less intelligent. So it's a means to get oneself ahead. So what are the symptoms of intelligence? Now you may say, well, what's this got to do with bhakti? Well, maybe not very much in one sense, because bhakti, you don't need to be a PhD to do bhakti. And probably if you have a PhD, you're less likely to do it, because Joro Bidda Jato Mayar Bhaibhav Tomar Bhajane Badha Moha Janamiya Anitta Shangshare Jivke Kareye Gadha. This is the analysis of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Hindi anuvad piche ho raha hai, jo Hindi mein sunna chahte hai. Actually, we should have someone at the door telling those who are coming in. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that materialistic learning, mundane knowledge, jara vidya, we may think it's something glorious. The word used is vaibhav. You all know the word vaibhav. So something glorious, but it's mayar vaibhav. It's a glory of illusion. It's not actually anything really glorious. And it is an obstacle in Krishna bhakti. So you may think, well, I learned so many things. But learning so many things without relationship to Krishna, one becomes like an ass who carries heavy weights, but of no real benefit to the ass. So we may carry so much information in our mind, but it simply increases the illusion in this world where everything is temporary. So what is intelligence? We should discuss this. Real intelligence is to worship Krishna. As another Bengali poet says, Jai Krishna bhaje she boro chatur. who worships Krishna is actually very clever. But there is different understanding of intelligence among the materialistic people. But buddhi, or intelligence, is a word which is often used in Bhagavad Gita. Buddhi grahyam atindriya, that taking help or from the intelligence, one should come above the platform of the senses. Buddha bhava samanvitaha, a person who is intelligent and who has emotional feeling for Krishna, he worships Krishna. So intelligence is a factor in spiritual understanding also. So what is intelligence? What are the symptoms of intelligence? Well, good memory should be one of them. The students, they have to remember so many things. They have to cram into their mind so many things. It's some subjects more than others, just like medicine. Achyuta Krishna studied medicine for how many years? 5 years? 5.5 years. You have to remember so many things, so many technical terms. Every single bone in our body has a different medical name, and the doctors, that's the first thing you learn, right, isn't it? Anatomy. You have to remember every single Latin name for every single bone in the body, and that's only the beginning. There's 5.5 years of that kind of stuff. So lots of memory, you have to remember, that's one symptom of intelligence, is memory. And another symptom is understanding. Because if you can't become a doctor just by learning everything in the book. You have to understand it also, understand the principles of physiology and everything else. How things interact with each other. Especially in a subject like, is there any, oh, I say like, but there's not really another subject like mathematics. A lot depends, it's a different kind of intelligence. It's not just a matter of cramming facts and figures, but you actually have to understand how different principles work. And that is true in other subjects also, like psychology, which is a very different subject to mathematics. A sense of understanding how different things interact and work. And then another symptom of intelligence is the ability to grasp things quickly and thoroughly. That's where you find some students are very slow. They may go on they may take 1 year to learn what someone else learns in a few days. Just like it's described at Avanti Ashram, which is, where is Avanti Ashram? You should all know, all the people living in Bhopal. It's in Ujjain. Krishna and Balaram went to study in Avanti Ashram, and they learned the whole curriculum in a few days. Because actually they are the source of all knowledge. So other people may take a long time to study, and others, even if they try to make them understand, they can't understand. They'll go on. You try to teach them. Some people trying to teach them, it's like trying to teach a block of wood. They just can't understand anything. And even though education is compulsory in countries like England and America, still many children, after going through school compulsorily for, that means they go through 10 years of schooling, and even after 10 years of schooling, they still can't read or write or do simple arithmetic, because there's a big hole up there, big empty gap. There's large space between the ears. So one symptom of intelligence is the ability to learn quickly. There are tests by which one can measure one's what's called the intelligence quotient, IQ. But the main thing that those IQ tests, they test, is one's ability to perform IQ tests. Because intelligence is much more wider faceted than what they, than the kind of things they give you to do in IQ tests. For instance, an IQ test cannot measure one's practical intelligence. You can be very intelligent according to the IQ test, but in practical matters of problem solving, you may be useless. You have no practical intelligence. You may have a whole room full of big intelligent scholars, and then they find there's something that it's burning and it's on fire, and they're all bewildered. They don't know what to do. They don't have any practical intelligence. That to get a bucket of water or call a fire brigade or whatever. They just become bewildered. So there are different kinds of different symptoms of intelligence. We presume that humans are more intelligent than animals, but not in every respect. Birds are more intelligent at building nests. If we were to give an engineer, he has a civil engineering, he knows how to build bridges and dams, but if you give him pieces of straw and ask him to make a nest, he can't do it. But a bird can do it. There are all kinds of different intelligence. How to cook, that's also one kind of intelligence. Some people are very good at that. You may have a PhD, but they don't know how to cook a chapati. That happens. That's quite common in modern India. The girls, they go to school, then they go to college, and then they get a PhD, and they're 29 years old, and they don't know how to cook a chapati. So that's not very intelligent, because who wants to marry a girl who can't even cook a chapati? But that's also one kind of intelligence, how to select the atta, and mix it in nice proportions, roll it out, have the tawa at the right temperature. This also requires, it's a different kind of, all different kinds of intelligence. One kind of intelligence is to think abstractly, and that, for instance, in mathematics is all abstract. There's no such thing as a number. There's no such thing. It's just a number is a concept. So abstract thinking, practical thinking, applied in all different kinds of fields. We have so many different fields of study. Someone may be very intelligent theoretically, but they have very little intelligence in how to deal with people. So they may be very big brain, but their personal dealings are very poor. They don't think how I should deal with people in such a way that they will be pleased, they will want to cooperate and do the right thing, and so on. What is the most important symptom of intelligence? What do you think? Any suggestions? Must be some intelligence suggestions out there. Most important symptom of intelligence. understanding. That's, yeah, okay. Understanding what? Understanding 2 plus 2 equals 4? Hmm? Understanding? The eternal truth. Okay, that's not bad. But there, some people would say, what's this, understanding the eternal truth? What do you mean? There is no eternal truth. Hmm? If you say that understanding the eternal truth, that presumes there's an eternal truth, which is not intelligently ascertained yet. Ah. Understanding that we're not this body, okay. How about this one? This is what I thought. That the best or the most important symptom of intelligence is how to use our intelligence best, and ascertaining or understanding, yes, but understanding what is best, what is the highest good for us individually and for others also. How about that? I thought that was the best use of intelligence, to find out what is the best thing for us and for others. So the other answers were also good, because that comes down to atato brahma jignyasa. Now that we have the human form of life and that intelligence, we should inquire into Brahma, the internal good. So understanding the eternal good, that's also good. That's also good. Good reply. So understanding what is best. And then in that will come your reply also, understanding we're not the body. Actually, everyone uses their intelligence all the time to try to get what is best for themselves individually. And if their intelligence, using the word intelligence in a slightly different way here, is more broad, then they'll think of the good of others also. So I may think what's best for me, but that's very selfish if we only think of what's best for me. If we may think what's good for my family, what's good for my neighbors, what's good for my country, what's good for all of humankind, what's good for the whole earth planet, what is the best thing? How can I live my life in a way that is best for me and for others? Now we may think like that, but practically speaking, if we think, let me lead my life in a way to do good for others, we may find that there are problems in that. Just like yesterday and today, I was discussing with Madhukanta Prabhu, who's sitting here, about Mother Teresa, who's famous as giving her life for the welfare of others. But she was also a meat eater, which means that she was, in her own estimation, doing good for others by feeding them meat, but the animals she killed, she wasn't thinking of the benefit of them. She caused suffering to so many animals, as do all other meat eaters. So although she's famous as a good person, her goodness only extended to a few human beings. And her goodness was also mixed with her cruelty to so many other living beings who she never thought about, who she was implicit in the murder of. So, before we start to think about doing good for others, we should first of all understand what is actually good. So that is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Jignyasu Shreya Uttamam. We should inquire into the highest good. Anything less than the highest good will be problematic. Another thing, going back to Mother Teresa, as she's so much praised as being such a great person, She couldn't actually help them because she didn't know what the highest good was. She thought that the highest good was to help people's bodies. But then your body is born, your body dies, and then you have to get born again. So really the highest good is to help people to get free from suffering eternally. She's famous for helping people get free from suffering. But she couldn't actually help them because she didn't know how to help them. Just on the bodily platform, that's all. Which is not really helping them at all, because according to one's karmic reactions, you have to suffer. You cannot avoid it. You have to get born and die again and again. So we should see what is the highest good. But even if we want to perform activities for the highest good and for those of others also, we'll find there are problems in that, because this is the world of problems. This world is full of problems, as you may have noticed. Those who are young, they're often very hopeful that everything, yes, life is ahead of me, everything will be wonderful. But as you get older, you find that life is one problem after another. You struggle all your life and then you die and you think, now it's finished. But it's not finished. You just go to another set of problems, that's all. So the whole material existence is full of problems. And that is another symptom of intelligence, the ability to solve problems, isn't it? That on the material platform and on the spiritual platform also. That's another thing I was just discussing with someone else the other day. One of our devotees of ISKCON in Zurich in Switzerland, he's paid a very high salary to do most of the time nothing. But whenever his company, it's some software company or something, whenever his company can't work something out, they call him and say, this is the problem, and he looks at it and he says, this is the solution. That's all. So he's very intelligent for solving problems. So that is a symptom of intelligence. There is a story in this regard. It's probably not true, but it's a parable, you can say. It's a didactic story. That there was a company which had a very complex machine. And it was quite an old machine, but it was working very well for many years. And one day it broke. And no one knew how to fix it. And then they called in some engineer. They were trying to do different things, adjust this and adjust that. And they called in one engineer who was an expert. And he looked at it. He took a hammer, boom, banged something, and then it worked again. Just in 2 minutes. He did it. So then he gave a bill, $100. He said, $100 you just hit with a hammer, it just took 2 minutes. So he said, give us a breakdown how do you come to $100? So he gave a breakdown. He said, hitting with a hammer, $1. Knowing where to hit, $99. Srila Prabhupada often also gave the example, the high court judge, he simply sits all day and does nothing. Time to time he says a few words, but he's paid a very high salary. And the peon in the court, he's running here and there, hey, go bring some tea and bring these papers and get the signature. All day he's running and he gets a very meager salary. He's doing much more work. But the high court judge is paid more because He has the intelligence to understand and analyze the whole situation. In Hitopadesh, that saying is there, buddhirasya balam tasya, who has knowledge, who has intelligence, has strength. There's the story of the rabbit and the lion, how the rabbit killed the lion, which I won't tell here, because it's a diversion. It's an interesting story, but let's stick to the problem. Mostly people like to hear stories, because people are not much interested in philosophy. But we should try. That's a symptom of intelligence, that we should try to understand philosophy. So solving problems, meeting challenges, these are also symptoms of intelligence. Games like chess are based on using one's intelligence to solve problems and meet challenges. More seriously, in real life, real life is much more complex than a game of chess. Because in a game of chess, there are fixed rules. And all the pieces, they can only move in certain ways. But human beings are much more complex than chess pieces. The knight can only move in a squiggly way. The bishop can only move on a diagonal. But a human is unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to do, or say, or react. So, politicians, political problems, economic problems, social problems, psychological, relational problems, scientific problems, these are symptoms of intelligence, to apply one's intelligence to solve a problem. And many times you don't solve it also. There are scientists who spend their whole life doing research on certain things, and they still, at the end of life, they still don't come to any solution. Such things are going on. So our whole, Einstein is an example of that. He died trying to find solutions to problems which still aren't solved. Scientists, whole generations of scientists have come and gone who are trying to solve the problems of wedding its relativity theory with quantum theory. 100 years they've been trying, and they still can't do it. So whoever does it will get a big Nobel Prize, if they ever do it. They may never do it. But even if they do it, they'll still find there are so many problems. Because the scientists, they do research, then they discover something, they think, now we did it. Now we found out everything. And then they find something else, doesn't quite fit. And they go on and on. Science means investigation going on and on and on and on. There's no end. They thought atoms. Okay, we discovered atoms. And then they discovered electrons, protons, neutrons, and it goes on and on. And then they say, actually, it's all waves, and then there's no end. There's no end to it all. And then strings, and there's no end to it all. So, to solve a problem requires intelligence, but the most intelligent person finds out what is the real problem that we have to solve. It's in one sense, Einstein wasn't very intelligent because he spent his whole life studying matter, but he didn't investigate into the really important problem: why are we suffering in this world? How to get free from suffering? Now, Einstein, of course, he was an ethical person. He was trying to do good for humankind, but again, why only humankind? He was another meat eater, so all the people who are thinking of doing good for humanity, they don't think that the animals, they also suffer when you kill them to eat them. So in many ways, people's intelligence, it's not very well developed. Again, the example of Einstein. Very developed intelligence for studying certain aspects of science. Not all aspects. He wasn't an expert in evolutionary theory or genetic theory. There was no genetic theory. That came up later. So his intelligence was one-sided, but he didn't think about suffering, how to get free from suffering. Similarly, Mother Teresa, she was thinking how to alleviate the suffering of others, but she never thought about, she never crossed her mind, never thought about it, that animals and birds that we're killing, they also suffer when you kill them. So it's very restricted, narrowly focused intelligence. So the real intelligence should be, what is the highest good, Shreya Uttamam, which begins with seeing what are the obstacles to our good. What is it that we want? We want to be happy. But there are problems, there are obstacles. What are the obstacles? Birth, death, old age and disease. Therefore Buddha is called Buddha, because he had the intelligence to see Janma Mrityu Jaravyadhi Dukkha. This world is full of suffering in the form of birth, death, old age and disease, and he wanted to get free from that. So that is real intelligence, to find out what is the really crucial problem. Because even if the scientists can find out how to bring together, have a theory of everything, how to bring together relativity theory, bring that together with quantum theory, still there'll be birth, death, old age and disease. We are very enamored by scientific progress, by which we can, for instance, speak into a microphone, which is nothing new. That's been going on for more than 100 years now. Computers, artificial intelligence, and so many things, so many technological innovations based on scientific research and progress, but still there's birth, death, old age and disease. Still there's suffering. For all this scientific progress, people are more unhappy than at any time previously. There's more disturbance in society than at any time previously. Material prosperity does not bring happiness. Just like in Finland, Ishwarapuri Das Adhikari, something like that, he's from Finland. In Finland, there's no poverty. The government doesn't allow you to be poor. Is that right? Everyone, even if you don't work, they'll give you money. There's all kinds of social services. If you get sick, you don't have to worry like in India. If you go to see a doctor, the doctor, he may solve your health problem, but he'll give you a big hole in your pocket. You have to take a loan, 20 years loan, for seeing the doctor. They have some operation, 15 lakhs or whatever. Practically any operation is minimum 1 lakh nowadays, isn't it? Maybe hernia operation, which is hardly an operation anyway, is maybe you could get that done within 50,000, or I don't know, but it's so expensive. And then, but in Finland, no problem. Just go, they'll look after you, everything. But Finland is also one of the countries with the highest suicide rate in the world. Is it not? So people have everything. They have enough shoes, clothing, heating, because it's very cold there in the winter. You think it's cold in Bhopal in the winter, but in Finland it's minus 20 Celsius, minus 30. You can't imagine. It's so cold. But everything's arranged. Everyone has a car. Well, actually, some people in Helsinki, they don't bother. They just go around on bicycles, isn't it? Is it in the winter also? And all kind, the roads get covered with snow, and immediately they'll clear the roads, and all very good arrangement for material living. But still people are not happy, and still they have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. So the real use of intelligence is to see what is our highest good. And there cannot be any good as long as we're suffering. Isn't it? But most people, even if they're very intelligent, they don't have the intelligence to see this. Pashyan api na pashyati. That is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. People see, but they don't see. They see that people are suffering, I'm suffering, but somehow they don't see because of maya, illusion. They think, well, anyway, I'm suffering. Why I'm suffering? Because my girlfriend doesn't like me anymore. Okay, I'll get a new girlfriend. Or I'm suffering because I don't have enough money. Okay, well, somehow I'll get some more money. I'm hoping I'll get some more money and so on. Always, it's called durasha. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the word is used. We're always hopeful, asha. We have so many hopes, but durasha, because the hopes will never be fulfilled. And even if it is fulfilled, still you're not happy. One of the most famous devotees in our movement is Ambarish Das Adhikari, better known as Alfred Ford, who is born into great wealth as one of the heirs in the Ford Motor Car Company. So he was born into tremendous wealth, very, very rich. But he said that he came to Krishna consciousness because he saw from the very beginning of his life how miserable all the rich people are. So money doesn't bring happiness, it doesn't bring wealth. And it certainly doesn't stop birth, death, old age, and disease. We have to suffer. That is the nature of this world. The modern civilization thinks it's... We think, oh, we're very advanced because we have big buildings, skyscraper buildings, and we have airplanes, and computers and internet, but people are fools. They're not intelligent because they don't look to see what are the real problems. The real problems are birth, death, old age and disease repeated. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Again and again and again. So it is a foolish civilization. And however advanced we may be, it's still the same thing. We're just hoping. It's the same thing. People 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they didn't have computers and electricity in every home and all this kind of thing. So we may think we're more advanced, but we're in the same situation. They suffered birth, death, old age and disease. We suffer birth, death, old age and disease. This is just another display of maya, to think that, oh, now we're very advanced. Now we're living happily because we have electricity. But people are not happy. And we still have to suffer repeated birth and death. We should become more intelligent. Now there's more and more people are educated. It used to be in India that only, less than 10% of the population were literate. When I first came to India, which was in 1976, most of the people were illiterate. So if you go in a government office or anything, most of the people have this... ink pad with a sponge and people put their thumb. Still they have that for the thumbprint, because people can't even sign their name. Most people were like that. They couldn't even sign their name. Nowadays, most people, they send their children for education, but people are still foolish, because the education is how to, the whole education is meant to be how you can get a job to earn money. But the real problem is how to get free from birth and death. And so you get money, and people are not happy, and they try to forget all their problems by getting more Maya. Now there's more Maya. Previously people were in Maya, nowadays there's more illusion. Just like, for instance, at the present time, I'm sure you're all aware, the World Cup cricket is going on, and people are all excited. Oh, India, we're going to win the World Cup cricket. And in other countries, they're more interested in football. And in Finland, I think it's ice hockey, is it? They're more interested in hockey, playing ice hockey, because the country is covered with ice about 7 months, 8 months of the year, something like that. In Russia also, they're more interested. In Canada, they're just like here, people get all excited about cricket. So in Finland, they get all excited about ice hockey. Do you know what ice hockey is? Do you know what ice is? I mean, when you say burf, you think of something that you put in the drink, right? But there, they have whole big lakes, 5 miles, 6 kilometers, 10 kilometers wide, all ice. So they play sports on the ice. It's difficult for you to even imagine. So sports, that is one kind of nasa, intoxication, and actual intoxication. Now they're encouraging in India, drink alcohol, then you become high class. Previously in India, it's understood anyone who drinks alcohol is very low class. Now they turned it around and they think, oh, if you drink alcohol, it's very high class. Of course, there's the village, what do they call it? Daru, that's low class, but you have to drink whiskey. That's very high class. All kinds of intoxication. And of course, in the Western countries, there are all kinds of intoxicants. Illegal, but they're everywhere. I think even in the schools, is it? They sell them in the schools, all this ecstasy, drugs, and all these kind of things. So people are taking all kinds of drugs, which do all kinds of bang, funny things to your mind, so that you forget how miserable you are. There's a saying in English, to drown your sorrows. Drown, of course, means to go underwater and then you drown. So drown your sorrows, it means to drink lots of alcohol and then you forget all your sorrows. You forget all your misery. The only problem is that you wake up the next morning with the same misery plus a big headache, plus you just wasted so much of your money on drink. And plus, when you are drunk, you might have done something stupid like punch someone in the face. So you might wake up in a police cell. You never know. So this idea that we are making advancement, this is most unintelligent. There's no doubt that we are using intelligence. There is intelligence to build highways and motor cars and space rockets and is intelligent, but it's a misuse of intelligence. Because the intelligence should be used for finding out what is our real problem and how to get free from that. In the material world, when we solve a problem, we make another problem. Just like we may think, oh, it's a problem. I want to go from one place to another. It's a problem. I want to go fast. So the problem was solved by having horses, horse carriages in cities in the West. At first they had horse carriages. But then there was a problem, pollution. Because the horses passed stool everywhere. They made a bad smell. So then they invented the horseless carriage, otherwise known as the automobile or the car. And they thought, this is very good. There's no more, we can go faster, and there's no more horse dung. But then another kind of pollution came, and now traffic jams. There's so many, and then going fast, 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 so fast, and crash, and so many people die. So many people die, thousands of people in India alone die every year from road accidents. So we solve one problem, but in the material world, if you solve one problem, you create 10 more problems. It's always like that. So what is that knowledge that we can get by which all problems are solved? Kasmin vigyatam bhavati. What is that verse? Sarvam etam vigyatam bhavati. What is that knowledge by knowing which everything is known? That is the very intelligent question which is asked in the Upanishads. What is it knowing which everything is solved? Solution to all problems. You may say that's impossible. It is impossible as long as we're on the mundane material platform. But there is a problem solver that we go outside the material platform. Come to the spiritual platform. Instead of forgetting our problems or becoming desperate and committing suicide or stoicism is a philosophy, we just say, okay, there's problems, what to do? Just accept it. But that's not a solution to the problem. That doesn't solve our problem. We become depressed. But there is a solution. Arjuna, he was depressed. The first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what's the Sanskrit name usually given for that? Is anyone known? First chapter, Sanskrit name? Arjuna Vishada Yoga. Vishad, describing Arjuna's depression. Arjuna was depressed because he saw that I only want to do good. All my life I only wanted to do good. But now I'm in a situation where whatever I do, there will be bad. If I fight, then I will do bad. By fighting with my elders, with my gurus, and so many people will be killed, and the women will be unprotected. And if I don't fight, then I'm betraying my brothers. Maybe you've heard of this Stephen Covey. He talks about the 7 habits of highly successful people. So he talks about a win-win. We should try, when there's a problem and 2 people are disagreeing, they should try to find a win-win solution. You win, I win. But Arjuna was in a lose-lose situation. He said, whatever I do, what is that? Nayam shayam anupashyami. I don't see any good can come of this. He was in a lose-lose situation. And that is the situation in this material world. There is no solution. Everything ends in misery followed by more misery. But there is a solution. That is on the spiritual plane. When we understand that the very reason why we're suffering what is the reason that we're suffering in this material world? How we can get free from that suffering. First of all, we should try to find the root cause of suffering. That is a difference in approach between Ayurveda and Western or allopathic medicine. Allopathic medicine treats the symptoms, whereas Ayurveda It takes more time to cure, but it treats the cause. For instance, if you're getting boils, that now the mango season is coming. So if you eat lots of mangoes, especially certain varieties, without soaking them first in water to take out the heat, then you're likely to get boils. They don't believe in that in your allopathic medicine. They don't believe that, although everyone in India knows it. Or if you eat lots of this eggplant, brinjal, especially with the skin, then you'll get boils. They also don't believe that in Western medicine. Because it's very heating, very poisonous. So in Western medicine, what's the cure? Antibiotics. And if it becomes too big, then you cut it. So in Ayurvedic or any other system of medicine, they will see what is the cause. Excess pitta. You have to bring the heat of the body down. And you have to cleanse the body of impurities which cause boils. So it may take more time to cure, but it's a thorough cure. I know myself, in my youth, this must have been about 1977, in which I was 20 years old, and I was getting boils again and again, boils and abscesses. What's the word for abscess in Hindi? Boil is fora. Abscess? Abscess, I say bolte. Yeah, fora. Anyway, I was getting abscesses. It's an internal boil, and it's much more painful, actually. I was getting one after the other, and I didn't know. Then I went to one Ayurvedic doctor in Delhi. He said, "Do you eat eggplant?" I said, "Yes." Actually, I ate lots of it, because I used to like it. He said, "Stop it." I stopped, and still some boils were coming, because still the poison was in the blood. And then it finished, and I didn't get after that. So, they didn't teach you that in medical school, did they? But the Indian doctors, they'll still tell you, because the Indian doctors, they know also all these things. Anyway, the point is, we should find out what is the root cause of the problem. What is the root cause of our suffering in this material world? How can we get free from suffering? We have to understand what is the cause of the suffering. So, the cause of the suffering, how will we find out? Should we do research? What will we do? We'll get a microscope. Will we find the cause of our suffering? Well, maybe we'll find some germs which cause the malaria carried by mosquitoes. So, all right. But it still doesn't say, why do we have to suffer anyway in this material world? The answer given in Shastra is ajnana, lack of proper knowledge. We don't know who we are, why we are in this world. If we get that knowledge, we can start to solve the problem. If we don't get that knowledge, we can't start to solve the problem, or we can only start to solve it in a very incomplete and unsatisfactory manner, by symptomatic treatment. Symptomatic treatment, just like giving antibiotics. Or by cutting the boil, you wait for the boil to burst, and when it's almost ready, then you cut it. One devotee I know, she's from India, she's living in America. So she went to she had a boil, she went to the doctor, he said $2,000. $2,000 to cut a boil. So she thought, well, with that money I can go to India and get it treated, I can go and visit my family in Delhi. And so she booked a flight, got on a flight to Delhi, and then when the plane was descending, because of the change in pressure, the whole boil burst. And it was painful, but at least she didn't have to pay anything or hardly anything to the doctor. There's a little anecdote to take you along, to keep try and keep the interest in all this philosophical discussion. So what is the root cause of suffering is we don't know why we're suffering. Why are we suffering? We are meant to be happy. Everyone is meant to be happy. That's why we're trying to be happy. When it's hot, we put on the fan. We didn't, out of, now we'll start to use the fans. Today was hot for the first time. But we're out of the habit of using the fan. So, when it's hot, we put on the fan. When it's cold, we put on some warm clothing. We're always trying to make adjustments. Why? So that we can be happy. But what is that one complete adjustment that will make us always happy? That is to understand that we are not meant to be happy in this material world, because the very nature of this material world is that it is full of suffering. So even if you get a Nobel Prize and lots of money, and you're famous, and you're good-looking, and when all the girls, when you go out, they all faint when they see you, you'll still be miserable. Or if you're a beautiful woman and all the men faint when they see you, that's not happiness. Still you have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. And actually those people who enjoy material happiness more, they suffer more. Also, just like I said about Alfred Ford, or even there's a beautiful woman, and she's, but then when she's 50 years old, she's not beautiful anymore. However much she goes to the beauty parlor and puts on lipstick, it's gone. Short time, it's all gone. And even if you're very rich and very famous, Bill Gates is one, he's famous as being one of the richest men in the world, right? How old is he? Must be what, 60, something like that? Any idea? About 60 years old, is it? Anyone has any idea? I don't. Anyway, let's say he's... So in 60 years' time, he's not going to be one of the richest men in the world. Why not? He's going to be dead. There's going to be no Bill Gates. He's going to be somewhere else in another body. So all his money will be gone. There's no, even if you think there's happiness from being rich, you can't keep it. And actually you may think, I'll be happy by getting lots of money, then I can eat nice food and this and that. But the food that you eat, unless it's Krishna prasadam, it's the pleasure you get. The same pleasure that the people with no education, these daily mazdoors, daily laborers, in the evening, they're working on building the road. Their wife gets some bajra. They cook bajra atta. They make one roti. They eat it. They feel the same pleasure. Maybe they feel more pleasure than you do eating all your fancy foods, because they have good appetite. That's all they eat. Have you seen them? They just cook some bajra roti, and that's it. Maybe some salt and some mirchi, and that's all. And they go on. They're strong. They don't go to the gym or anything. They're all strong. They're very healthy. The pleasure they get from even the dog who's eating some garbage in the street, he feels the same pleasure that people... fancy food, go to the restaurant, Chinese, all this kind of thing. Same pleasure. And same pain. There's no pleasure in this material world. There's plenty of pain. So that pain comes, the root cause is thinking that I can be happy in this world and not understanding that we are meant to be happy in relationship with Krishna. Happiness means in relationship with Krishna. All our problems are solved if we simply agree to serve Krishna. Jai Shakal Bipod Bhakti Vinod Balen Jakon Onam Gai. Bhaktivinoda Thakur informs us all the problems are solved if we simply chant the name of Krishna. But people are very intelligent. They think, well, I don't believe in any God. Show me God. And they think, that's very intelligent. See, only foolish people believe in God. See, intelligent people, they're very intelligent, and they think, show me God. And they you can't show them God. Then there's no God. This is the most foolish idea. Just like someone, he may be an atheist. I believe in science. Okay, you believe in science. So you believe in the whole world came into being by Big Bang. Yes. Okay, show it. Show me Big Bang. If you can't do a Big Bang, at least show a little bang. Make a little universe. Do you believe in electrons and protons? Okay, show me. Show me, where are they? You believe in evolution? Show me. Monkeys giving birth to... you get in the zoo, one monkey giving birth to a human being? Show me. Did anyone ever see? No one ever saw. But they believe it. So we can show... Yes, we... we can show you God. But you have... Just like you may say... I may say, well, show me that neutrinos exist. They're supposed to have proved it recently. Okay, we can show you. They'll take you to some massive apparatus and do the experiment, but I didn't see any neutrino. Well, you have to be trained, otherwise you can't understand. Same thing, we can show you God, but you have to be trained. Otherwise you can't understand. You need training is required. Then you can see. Then you can understand. This someone who's expert in what's that? Some complex Latin word. Ophthalmology. They don't have to. I know there's one doctor in Udupi. He doesn't. He just looks at your eye and he can tell you what's wrong, what the power is and this and that. He just has a magnifying glass. He looks in your eye and says, okay, all his instruments is one small magnifying glass. Just by seeing, he can say, it's plus two, minus one, whatever. So he sees the same eye that someone else sees, or you can see your own eye in the mirror. But because he has the training and the knowledge, he can see what you don't see. So those who are trained, they can see God everywhere. But those who are not trained, they can't see God anywhere. Now we're seeing, what am I seeing? I'm seeing there's pictures, a wall, human bodies. What is it? It's, in one sense, you can say it's all atoms. We're just seeing atoms. How do you know? Because you've been taught in the school. Otherwise, you don't see atoms. But if I say to you, whatever we see, it's all atoms and molecules. You'll agree, is it not? How do you agree? Because you're trained in knowledge. So, intelligence means to be trained in the knowledge by which we can see things at the most fundamental level. We can understand things as they really are. So that training is the training in Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, the science of the knowledge of God, by which we can see who we are, who is God, why we are suffering in this world, how to be free from suffering. So this is the best use of intelligence, to understand how we can be free from all problems, how everyone can be free from all problems. We have to start off with some faith. Now people who believe in science say, well, we don't have faith, we just believe in science. No faith. But they also have faith. Just like you say, well, I believe in science, that evolution, humans came from monkeys. It's faith. You never saw any human coming from a monkey. I believe in science. Big Bang. Everything came from... Did you ever see a Big Bang? Did any scientist ever see a Big Bang? But they all believe it. It's only faith. They can't prove it. It's only faith. So faith is required in any sphere. But the unfortunate thing with science is, however much you may be advanced in science, you can't stop suffering, birth, death, old age and disease. But that can be done by Krishna consciousness, as is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Vita raga bhaya krodha manmaya mam upashrita bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava agataha. Krishna says that becoming freed from attachment, material attachment, asakti, vita raga, from fear, bhaya, and krodha. Krodha means anger, frustration, manmaya, becoming absorbed in me, mam upashrita, taking shelter of me. Bahavo, many, many people, by jnana and tapasya, by knowledge and austerity, puta, became purified. Madbhava magataha, they came to me, they came to the same level as me. Krishna, on the same level as Krishna, means purified consciousness, free from material desire, free from material attachment, free from material fear. So this is the proper use of intelligence, to become purified. Even if we're a brilliant scientist, even if we have billions of dollars, if we have calm, crowed, lobe, lust, anger and greed in our heart, there's no happiness. It's not possible. And even if we get free from calm, crowed, lobe, unless we develop love for Krishna, it's still not full happiness. Full happiness means not only to be free from bad qualities, but to develop good qualities. And the highest good quality is love, love of Krishna. So this real intelligence comes to love. You may think, well, that's all very sentimental, but ultimately we are feeling beings, is it not? We have feelings. You may be a PhD, this, that, but if we have no love, no feeling for anyone, then we'll be miserable. But the problem in this world is that even if we love others, that also causes suffering, because we love them, but they don't love us. Or we love, and then they're separated from us by time, by death. All these things should be considered. There is hope. We should apply our intelligence to that which is for our highest benefit. We are meant for happiness. We should find out how we can actually be happy. There's no happiness in sense enjoyment. Yehi sangsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddhaha. The happiness that comes from interacting the senses with the sense objects is not happiness. Neither in the beginning, when we're thinking about how to do it, when we're doing it, the after effect is all simply miserable. Therefore, an intelligent person, that word comes, Buddha, an intelligent person does not take part in this indriya sukh, sensual enjoyment. So, this is for intelligent people. This Krishna consciousness is meant for intelligent people. Sometimes we think, oh, this singing and dancing and bhakti, that's not very intelligent. You should become an atheist. That's really intelligent. We don't believe in all this God stuff. Or you may think that, yes, we're very intelligent. We study the Upanishads and We're very intelligent, but we don't believe in all this bhakti. Bhakti is for stupid people. But actually, bhakti is for the most intelligent. We find that the Vaishnava Acharyas, their philosophy that they've given, that is the highest and best and most intelligent. People in Kali Yuga, they think they're intelligent, but they're not intelligent. They think that happiness comes simply from sense enjoyment, which even the animals have. But the highest use of intelligence is to worship Krishna. In Kali Yuga, that's done by Sankirtan, by chanting the names of Krishna. That is the best use of intelligence, because that will actually make us happy and purify us. Therefore, it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayarya Jantihi Sumedasaha Medhas. This is another word for buddhi, intelligence. In Kali Yuga, people are generally not very intelligent. But in Kali Yuga, those people who do have good intelligence, they will worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by Sankirtan Yajna. That is the purport of this verse. So actually, Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti, is meant for the most intelligent people. And even if we're not intelligent, because mostly in Kali Yuga people are not intelligent, we will get intelligence by chanting Hare Krishna. You want to improve your intelligence? Chant Hare Krishna. That will give us spiritual intelligence. Hare Krishna. If there are any intelligent questions about this, please ask. Yeah, we should speak on the platform of intelligence. Srila Prabhupada, he spread this Sankirtan movement all over the world by singing Hare Krishna and chanting, but by intelligently presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It's not that people all over the world just said, oh, okay, that's nice. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, we'll stop eating meat. We'll stop drinking wine. No, people came to it by being convinced by their intelligence. Srila Prabhupada, you please listen to his lectures. We have available Srila Prabhupada's lectures. He speaks on the platform of intelligence. Mostly people who speak on religion, they speak just some be good, do good, smile, be nice, or they tell stories. But Srila Prabhupada addressed the intelligence by which people can understand and then they can make a commitment to change their life. Simply smile, be nice. All right, that's okay. But that doesn't actually change our lives. There has to be a change of our understanding to understand that our whole way of thinking needs revising. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke on the platform of intelligence. So we're trying to appeal to your intelligence. Make an intelligent commitment to Krishna consciousness. Yeah, so any question, please? Yes, please. Generally, it's thought that women are less intelligent. We're not supposed to say that. But if you take to Krishna consciousness, you become more intelligent. So shall I answer in English or Hindi?
As you wish.
Okay. So we're talking about intelligence, but it's also said that the mercy of Krishna is all in all. Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam. That's true, but the guru is also meant to be a teacher. Well, Krishna's mercy, he gives his mercy in the form of Bhagavad Gita. Gives us instruction. He didn't just say to Arjuna, okay Arjuna, put his hand on his head. So the mercy of Bhagawan and his devotees is required, but one major symptom of that mercy is giving us instruction for our benefit. And if we take that instruction and act on that instruction, then Krishna will give us the mercy by which we can come to him. This is addressed in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna says, Tesham satata yuttanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Tesham evanukam partam aham agyana jangtamaha nashyami atma bhavastho jnana deepena bhasvata. So you may have heard within these two verses which I just recited, one word came, anukampa. Do you know this word, anukampa? Anukampa is a synonym for kripa, daya, karuna, prasad, which they all get translated into English as mercy or compassion. So Krishna says, to those devotees who are always engaged in my service with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So that's Krishna's mercy, that he gives the intelligence. Tesham eva anukampartam. Tesham, to them, eva, certainly. Anukampa. By my mercy. Aham, to destroy their ignorance, which is within their heart. Agyana jang tamaha. The ignorance, the darkness of ignorance, I am the jnana deepa. Krishna says, I give them the jnana deepa, the light of knowledge. So mercy, that is required. But a principal symptom of the mercy is to give the knowledge by which we can help ourselves. We take the knowledge, we act on that, and if we're sincere, then Krishna will reveal himself to us. So both are there. It's mercy coming down, but we also have to take the mercy. We have to act on that and use our intelligence to understand that we should act on that. You may know that in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, which is spread all over India, but which is particularly prominent in Tamil Nadu, there are two schools there, which in Tamil, within the Sampradaya, there are two divisions. So the two divisions, they're called in Tamil, Varigalai and Tengalai, which means the northern path or the northern group and the southern group. The northern group is based in Kanchi and the southern in Sri Rangana. Anyway, so one of them, one path, one group, they say that if you just surrender, well, they use there's the Markata Nyai and the Marjara Nyai. Markata means monkey, and Marjara means cat. So one of them says that the relationship between Bhagawan and the devotee is that just like the cat picks up the kitten. So the kitten doesn't have to do anything. Just the cat picks up and looks after. Whereas the monkey baby has to hold on to the mother. So there's a One of them says that no, you approach Bhagavan and Bhagavan out of his own mercy will pick you up. It's nothing you do, it's all mercy. And the other says, no, you have to do something. You have to hold on to Bhagavan. Then he will take you with him. So in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, it's both mercy is there. We're completely dependent on God's mercy, but at the same time we have to make an effort. So how is that if we're completely dependent on God's mercy? The example is given, if you're fallen in a well, the only hope is if someone sends down a rope. So you're completely dependent on the mercy of someone to put down the rope. But you also have to take hold of the rope. So both things are there. We're completely dependent on Bhagavan's mercy, but we also have to show our willingness to take his mercy by following his instructions. But we don't want to because we're rascals. So he gives us the knowledge and the intelligence by which we can be convinced that we should do. If you look at someone who puts the rope down, two people have fallen in the well and the rope comes down. You say that, okay, let's grab the rope. The other one says, no. How do you know? The person might be pulling you up just to kill you when you get up there. Or how do you know? Maybe it's an electrified rope and you'll die of shock. And someone may say, no, there's no rope. It's just an illusion. It's all Maya. It doesn't exist. So the person at the top will say, no, no, it's a rope. You can be benefited. And they may say, well, actually, it's quite nice down here. There are lots of frogs which we can catch and eat. So, what do we need to go up for? So both things are required. Mercy is required, and our own intelligence is required. But a symptom of mercy is giving us the intelligence by which we can understand what we should do, how we can get God's mercy. And by the mercy of God and Guru, he gives us that knowledge, and Dibbogyan Hriday Prakashito. That knowledge becomes manifest within our heart. We can understand by the mercy of Guru. Guru teaches us, but we also have to serve the Guru in such a way that he will be pleased, and then that knowledge will become manifest in our heart. Okay, understood. Intelligent question. So, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. You know that, huh? Krishna, what is that? Krishna nam barui chad madhur. Jai Krishna bhaje shay baro chad. Huh? Koi? Anyone else? No? Okay. So please come here regularly and increase your spiritual intelligence by regularly hearing. Actually, it's a fact. You won't get discussions like this anywhere else, is it? Will you get such knowledge and discussions anywhere else? I don't think so. Definitely not in the colleges and universities. And even if you go to temples, mostly they don't teach anything. You just go, take darshan, and you come. But here, this is an educational institution. for giving spiritual knowledge. Yeah, so Jo bhi announce karna hai, to I can't announce karo.